This is The Bookshelf from NHPR. I'm Peter Biello. Social media allow us to create another self. We have our in-person, corporeal lives, and then there are our digital lives, the people we are or seem to be on the screen. Where is this technology going? Will we someday be able to upload ourselves to a digital space and exist only there? And if so, for how long? And what happens to our minds, to free will, to our ability to love? New Hampshire resident and science fiction writer Jim Kelly is no stranger to these questions, having explored them in stories he's been writing for several years now, stories he has now assembled into the new collection called The Promise of Space. Kelly has won the prestigious Hugo, Nebula, and Locus Awards for his work, and he's on the faculty of the Stone Coast Creative Writing MFA program at the University of Southern Maine, and he joins us now. Welcome.
Hi, how are you?
I'm so glad you're here. I really enjoyed reading your book.
Thanks.
And in the fiction world of your creation here, people seem, by and large, quite willing to sort of abandon their bodies or at least duplicate themselves in a second digital self. What makes you think people are so willing to do that?
Well, you just have to look online, as you said in your introduction, where we've already on the cusp of that, where people become different people online in their Facebook page. Doesn't necessarily represent who they are, but it does represent an avatar, an aspect of them. But the other thing is that we are also on the cusp of some amazing digital revolution in terms of what computers can do, and what we can do with our computers. And so, I think that a lot of people are likely to, when they add up the pluses and minuses of a funeral home and a digital afterlife, may opt for that, even if their digital afterlife is not quite the same and in some ways is attenuated from the life that they lived when they were in their bodies. Nonetheless, it is a way of going on. So, you know, I don't think everyone will choose that, but it's a big world with a lot of people who have feelings about, you know, going on.
The title of your book is The Promise of Space, and it's named after a story in the collection in which there's a man who he's been traveling in space and he's been sickened by his travels in space. Can't remember much. That's causing some trouble with his wife. And overall, that seems like a pretty bleak promise of space. This didn't work out too well for this guy, but is that how you feel? Is the promise of space is actually a pretty bleak one?
Well, this is a controversial story, and it in some ways represents a betrayal of my heritage as a science fiction writer. I am not optimistic about our future in space. I do think that we should send our robots to space, but when we talk about sending our bodies to space, I think that one of the things that will happen is that which happens to my hero. There's a thing out there, a nasty thing called galactic cosmic radiation, and it's all over space, and being out there for any length of time, for instance, our friends who are planning on going to Mars will be out there and have a serious dosage of radiation on that trip. So how does a human body react to that? Not well. But it goes to the things we were just talking about. Yes, maybe our bodies may not be able to go to space, but it's if there is, in fact, an uploading technology where we can live in computer space, then we could go to Mars, to the stars, but not as embodied human beings.
You write here in the afterword that you wanted to write more stories from the female perspective or from the perspective of female characters. Why did you want to do that?
Well, science fiction, alas, started as a boys' club. It's the boys' treehouse, and the boys were writing it, and the boys were reading it, and women not necessarily welcome. Over the course of my lifetime, it has come to pass that many, many wonderful women writers have changed the culture of the field. Not only women writers, but people of all sorts, diverse writers, different genders, different nationalities, different races. You've got to pay attention to the impacts of different cultures who all have access to science fiction as we have access to their cultures.
There's one story in this book where it's told from the perspective of a dependent intelligence. Am I saying that right? Dependent.
That is. Yeah. Right.
Dependent intelligence. Mm-hmm. A female, essentially a sex bot, right?
Yep.
She's built to attend to this one guy's every need, mm-hmm. And she is eventually set free. And I I bring it up because I wanted to ask you about something that appeared on your blog with regard to this story.
Right.
You said that you had some women read this story and they had some things to tell you
right.
about how to write about a female sex bot. What,
right.
what did they tell you?
Well, the first thing is that they were immediately repelled by the idea. And so the
by the idea of a man writing about this or about the idea of a sex bot in general?
Well, I think they were immediately repelled by the idea of a sex bot. And then the idea that I or a man was writing it also was made them feel a little squeaky. So I had a hard time with that. And there is a tradition in science fiction of robots. But the nature of robot is very problematic because if it's a smart enough to do stuff that you want it to do, then why is it your servant? And so there's the slave narrative that comes up in every science fiction robot. And then to layer on top of it the sex aspect, it's dangerous ground to be walking on. But what I think what I was schooled by my dear female colleagues, my women friends about this was, you've got to be careful from the get-go. You can't introduce this subject and then later do a quick plot reversal and say, okay, it was all a joke. No, you've got to be careful throughout from the very start. So there's a character in this story who is talking to the sex bot, and she explains, she actually is part of the bot liberation group, a secret underground bot liberation group. She explains to the sex bot, your programming is a kind of insanity. And of course, the sex bot doesn't agree with that, but it is, in fact, exactly what the point I needed to make, I think, for women to continue reading the story and not throwing it across the room.
This other female in the story essentially says, your mindless devotion to this man is holding you back.
Right.
And if you give up this devotion and start tending to your own needs,
right,
then you will experience more of what it's like to be a fully realized human. Even though she doesn't say it's human,
right,
it seems more human. At least it seems to me, the reader, that she's really becoming more of herself.
It is. It is. But what's interesting about this story is that she could say that to all she wants, but because our sex bot character has programming that prevents her from coming to that realization, the story asks what would happen if somehow that programming was removed. And so there's a moment in that story where she's like totally at sea, like, I don't have to do this, but I was programmed to do it, but I don't have to do it. And so that's a moment of change for her in the story.
Mm-hmm. MFA programs have traditionally shown a kind of aversion, right, to genre writing. They don't want to see Danielle Steele-esque stuff. They're a little averse to science fiction unless it has a well-developed character in it. They're more John Cheever than Isaac Asimov.
That's true.
I should say. Is there a place for science fiction in MFA programs? And if so, what is that place?
Well, I think it's short-sighted of any writer not to pay attention to the culture he lives in or she lives in. Our culture is on a rampage into the future with technology changing the way we live every day. So for any writer who wants to be writing about 2018 or 2019 and not taking that into account, you're basically looking backwards. And I don't think that's the fiction writer's job. There is, in fact, though, a longstanding prejudice against science fiction in the academy. But it's interesting that the academy of teaching has come to its senses more quickly, I think, with regard to that, to acknowledge that science fiction literature is literature, than the creative writing community, which still is worried that we're going to be getting, you know, space bimbos in brass bras and guys, warriors wearing a space helmet and loincloths. I mean, this is the kind of pop culture, pulpy baggage that science fiction unfortunately still brings to it. So, but I think that in general, when you look at some of the more recent award winners in mainstream literary fiction, you see a lot of writers who are playing with the science fiction tropes.
Mm-hmm. So how should science fiction be taught in MFA programs? Or should it be taught?
Well, I think one of the things that happens is it's a mutant form of literature. And the mutation has been that we have a whole history of robot stories. And so when you come to write a robot story now and you've never read a robot story of the history, what you sometimes end up doing is reinventing the wheel and say, well, Well, what will keep the robots from killing us? Well, there is a huge, you know, bulk of literature that talks about how this could be prevented. And so if you don't know that, you're going to be writing a story and science fiction fans will say, oh, come on. And a literary reader, a mainstream reader, may never have read any robot stories. Say, well, that's very interesting. I never thought of that. Well, people have been thinking about it for almost 80 years.
So you're saying it's tough to introduce to a general readership in an MFA class a very specific and sort of aware story.
I think that's right. And part of it is that some of my colleagues who are teaching will say, I love this story. You have great characters, but I don't understand the ideas of it. I mean, not the ideas, but the world building, the background that you have changed, the world that we live in to get to the world that you're writing about. And that's a difficult job of work to do a convincing world building story.
Well, Jim Kelly, thank you very much for speaking with me about your work and the wonderful world of sci-fi. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Jim Kelly is the author of the new collection of stories, The Promise of Space. And you can find a top five list of his reading recommendations at our website, nhpr.org. We're always looking for reading recommendations from listeners like you. What books should we put on our holiday gift-giving lists? Send us the name of the book and the name of the author and a brief description of why the book is a must-read. Our email address is books@nhpr.org. I'm going to recommend a book this week, Ordinary Light by U.S. Poet Laureate Tracy K. Smith. It's a memoir that traces her life from childhood through the death of her mother and shows in exquisite detail the evolution of her feelings on faith, sexuality, and family. Full disclosure, this recommendation is part rave and part promo. NHPR is presenting her with the Hall Kenyon Prize in American Poetry next week at the Currier Museum of Art in Manchester, and I'll be presenting her with the award and chatting with her about her work. And you can be there. Just visit nhpr.org/tickets to reserve your seat. This is The Bookshelf from NHPR. I'm Peter Biello. Thank you very much for listening.